Our science correspondent Chris Smith is in South Africa this week, seeing firsthand the 2 million-year-old fossil remains of one of our human ancestors called Homo sediba. At the same time, a cast of those very old bones has actually gone on display in Australia for the first time. Chris Smith joins you now from Johannesburg. Chris, good morning.
Hello, Fran.
You've been hanging out with fossils all afternoon.
Yeah, and I've seen some old bones too. Yes, this is the work of Lee Berger, who is Professor of Paleoanthropology at the University of Witwatersrand here in Johannesburg. And I met him first 3 years ago, and that was about 6 months before his son, Matthew, actually stumbled on this groundbreaking fossil. They'd been out just outside Johannesburg to a number of unexplored areas, and they were looking for old remains, but they never thought they would discover this, which is quite truly earth-shattering. And what it does is to give us an enormous amount of information about our paleoanthropological origins, because it is one of the missing links that explains how we turned from Australopithecus, which is one of our very primitive ancestors, to become more like our more like us type ancestors, Homo erectus. And this sort of sits in that gap between the two.
And just to remind people, we covered this story on Breakfast at the time. The bones are of a 12-year-old boy, isn't that right?
Well, there are two sets of skeletons, and what they published in the journal Science back on April the 8th, which is when this first came out, were these two skeletons that Lee Berger's son Matthew found the collarbone, the clavicle of one of them. And Lee Berger actually did his PhD on clavicles and scapulae, how ironic is that? And he spotted this and realised this was important straight away, and they extracted blocks from that site, and they have, well, at the time, they published some of the initial opening up of those blocks and some of the bones that they identified. They have since gone on to reveal a lot more, which they haven't yet published, which I've been looking at today, including a whole hand. Stunning, absolutely stunning. And so we're able to see that today, and that's going to come out next year.
And when you view things like that, Chris, in that kind of atmosphere, I think you know Professor Lee Berger, or you're certainly there with him today. Were you allowed to handle the bones, or that's impossible?
Oh, no. It's an incredible experience. When you go into the place where these bones are being worked on, you go through a door into another door, and the keys to the safes that have got these things in are in a lockable box with a key code on it. Mm-hmm. And you get these keys out, and then you open up the safes, and they're very thick fireproof safes, and then in 9 suitcases with foam lining, out come the suitcases, are the bones. And yes, we were able to pick those up, because it was just me and Lee Berger there today looking at these things. And it's awe-inspiring, because you think, I'm looking at a fossil that's 2 million years old. It's an intermediate link between what was before and what then subsequently turned into us. And it answers a lot of questions. So unlike the very primitive Australopithecines, these guys were a bit taller. They still had a small brain, but they would have been much more like us. They definitely walked upright. The amazing things about these skeletons I've been looking at is that many of the bones are still in articulation, so you can see how they would have connected together. There's almost a complete foot. The hand I saw today was stunning. It's almost the same size as my own, slightly longer thumb. But these are people that would have then turned into the next generation, i.e. Homo erectus, and then us.
Are there still questions around that, though? Is it still a matter of scientific controversy, the claim that this is the closest we've got to a missing link?
Well, as one famous person put it to me, whenever you find a fossil like this that is a missing link, all you do is turn one big gap into two smaller gaps. And so again, this sits in one area 2 million years ago, give or take. This specimen is about 1.95 million years, we think. And that is a time when there were Australopithecines moving around on the Earth. We've got evidence for them living at that same time. There were also Homo specimens moving around and living at the same time. So the two overlap. And what's missing is how we get these Australopithecines, which look very different from the Homo erectus, from one to the other. And what this specimen, or these two specimens, and there's probably a lot more out there, Lee was telling me today, and what they do is quite nicely bridge that gap, and they show how one could have evolved into the other, because they do have features which are common to both.
And presumably, if there's a lot more out there, this was a site near Johannesburg, there's a lot more digging going on. This is still a active site.
Absolutely. And what Lee is saying is that what's amazing is that there are lots of caves. He actually made the discovery by using a combination of GPS measurements and Google Earth. And by looking on Google Earth for various features, he was able to identify caves which are promising. And the reason caves are promising is that things have a habit of falling into them. They're quite literally a death trap. Mm. And what happened with these two specimens is that one of them is a woman, probably in her 30s, judging by the wear and tear on her teeth and her bones. And the other is a young, probably male. They look like they have fallen down into this death trap cave because they both have fractures. One of them's got a spiral fracture of the humerus, that's the boy. The female's also got a fractured forearm, indicating probably a fatal fall, which was around the time of death, into some kind of hole, and they would have then probably landed in water, and sediments then immediately covered them up, and that meant they were well preserved because those sediments turn into almost like concrete. And what the researchers here at Witwatersrand University are doing is painstakingly chipping away with very clever drills the hard concretions around the bones to reveal pristine bones with their original articulations. And there are some other surprising things coming, because Lee thinks he might have found skin in there too, but he's keeping quiet about that.
Almost 2 million years ago. Just briefly, another science news. Chris, a new study into phantom limb pain by amputees.
This is Patrick Haggard, who's a researcher at University College London. He taught me once, actually, and he's published a paper in the journal Current Biology this week showing a really interesting illusion and how you can actually overcome it. And it might inform our understanding of phantom limb pain, when people who have an amputation then suffer extreme and excruciating pain from the missing body part. What he did was to take something which is actually called the thermal grill illusion. What you do is you take your three fingers, so your index finger and your ring finger and your longest finger, and you put the ring finger and the index finger in warm water at 43 degrees, and you put the longest finger in cooler water at 14 degrees. Now, you might think that a person asked, "What are you feeling?" would say, "My longest finger is experiencing cool water." Actually, what subjects say is, "My longest finger is feeling excruciatingly hot, like it's being burned." But of course, there's no tissue injury going on. It's the nervous system being fooled, because you're switching off sensations from the cold long finger and by the warm fingers. And this leads to a disinhibition of pain fibers, which makes you feel you're being burned. But here's the amazing thing. If you do the same thing with both hands together, on both sides of the body, and then you bring the fingers out of the water and touch the three fingers together, the pain goes away or diminishes by 60%. And it's almost as though the brain has a sort of, and what they're describing it as, is a group of nerve cells that are involved in coherence of the body image. So there's a map of the whole body in the brain which has both sides of the nervous system which it's paying attention to, and it compares one side with the other and builds this coherent body map. And why people who have phantom pain may experience that pain, they're saying, is because when they lose a body part, the coherence map still thinks the whole body is there, but there's no opposite side of the body effectively touching together, and so you get a disparity in the signals coming in, and that's why it's very, very painful. And it goes away over time only after that body map rewrites itself. An understanding of this, they say, could help us to overcome the problems of phantom pain in future, because by understanding it, we might come up with a better way to tackle it.
Chris, thank you very much for joining us. You get back to them bones now.
Do me your best. Thanks, Fran.
Chris Smith joining us from Johannesburg. It's 17 to 7 on RN Breakfast.